everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and we are live on Fired Up. And tonight's topics are pretty interesting, pretty fascinating, and I picked them, so I agree on the first two things I said. California politics. Los Angeles is now a sanctuary city. We're going to talk about that, and in relation to the Lake and Riley court case, and the decision has been made on that, and how that affects everything from that perspective. We're also going to talk about fighting back. How some of these individuals who were hammered early on are now being rewarded because they stuck to their guns, went through the court process, and are seeing victories. And what that means for the rest of the country and the future, because this is not the last pandemic we are going to probably have in our lifetime. And then we're also going to talk about some COVID vaccine studies. And again, when this first got going, I remember our producer, my partner, Big John, I was like, hey, I can't say much because the data is being censored, you know, and the data is not out. And that data is now coming out on these studies and how damaging this vaccine may or may not be. We're going to talk about that. And then we're going to move on to some fun stuff. At least it's fun for us because I am like Bill O'Reilly. When my enemy hell, I am like any military strategist. When your enemy goes down, you smile. And right now, with the mainstream media changed their hateful rhetoric. We got some examples. And the reason that makes me happy is, hey, set it up for us in 2022. And then we're going to talk about the potential sale, or is it a death of MSNBC right now? They have seen some of their lowest ratings in over 25 years. And with that, before we get to the first topic at hand, let me introduce to you our panel. G. Mangani is back with us, as is the beautiful Annette Ross, my two faithful cohorts. And we have a special guest returning to our show is Miss Roxanne Hogue, who has to continually tell me how to pronounce her last name. Roxanne, tell the audience a bit about yourself.
It's four letters, Hogue, not that hard. I'm here in Los Angeles, living behind the blue curtain. I'm a mom of four. That's the most important thing. Wife of one. I'm an actress. Have worked, luckily enough, to be an on-screen television and film for 30 plus years on and off. And became a Republican activist after getting a little bit red-pilled. I confess and I repent. I volunteered in Bill Clinton's second presidential campaign. I'm sorry.
Hey!
Bill Clinton back then would not be welcome in the Democrat Party today. So I think that's all the mea culpa I need to make.
I've got to be honest, Roxanne. Our team tonight has a libertarian as our producer, a former Democrat in Annette Ross. I don't know if she still is one. And and you. And
according to her donations.
Yes.
And I was a former liberal in college. In fact, my tune changed the day I was going to register. They brought in, and when he said the evil white man, this was 1987. And then somebody raised their hand, well, what about Latinos? He goes, they hate brown people too. And I looked at my skin and I sat there and said, holy mackerel. I know I have lazy black friends. I have lazy relatives. Oh my God, I'm a Republican.
Well, you didn't leave me out because I'm a lifelong conservative here. So
thank you. Thank you for always staying. Yes. Kudos to you.
Those damn Indians. Smarter than the rest of us. All righty. Our fun is over. Let's get down to it. We are going to talk some California politics amidst the Lake and Riley rape and brutal murder trial and conviction. Los Angeles, during that court case, decided to become a sanctuary city. Most assumed it already was, but it really had not, it was never a sanctuary city, which is shocking considering how Gascon, the district attorney, George Gascon, made it a revolving door. You would have thought everything said was sanctuary. So now they are official. So they say they're doing this to protect undocumented immigrants from deportation and limit local law enforcement's cooperation with federal immigration. Roxanne, that is your neck of the woods. I mean, the rest of us are in San Diego, but that's your neck of the woods. What are your initial thoughts on that before we get into some details?
My initial thoughts are the ones that I'm, as a volunteer, I'm the communications director for the Los Angeles County Republican Party. And we put out a statement right away when they were considering this that's now ended up in the New York Times, LA Times, on Fox, across television, and been reprinted many times. And the point is, first of all, yes, we all thought we were already a sanctuary city. That was a big surprise. Second of all, complete performative kabuki theater, because while they were making these big pronouncements and having what appeared to be a unanimous vote, and it appeared that way because two of our city council members who have brains were not in the chamber that day. I find that very interesting. And they meekly said at the end of all this performance art, by the way, we're not going to break any federal laws. Well, the federal government has supremacy and dominion over immigration law. The thing that people have to remember about sanctuary declarations is that they are not for abuelitas getting ice cream, okay? They are for felonious criminal aliens, people who have added another crime onto the crime they already committed by breaking and entering into the country. What they have done has landed them in custody. So when you say we're not going to cooperate with ICE, you are now saying we're going to endanger our civilian population by releasing these people who've hurt someone with drunk driving, who raped someone, who assaulted someone, who robbed someone at gunpoint, or even murdered someone. We're going to let them walk out the door or charge them lower so it doesn't trigger an ICE removal order. And you guys can deal with them. And that's how we get to Laken Riley and Kate Steinle and Jamil Shaw and other people too numerous to name right here.
Right. You know, I don't want to get political on this, but as a strategist, I would be telling the GOP they've got to use Laken Riley as the flag bearer here. I saw one podcast, a guy crying on there after what the father said. He said, I could never stand 9 feet from that man and say those words. God bless that man. And I did not realize the brutality. How he picked up a piece of rock after she fought for 17 minutes. Now this is a woman fighting a stronger man, and for 17 minutes, just the thought of that makes me, it's sad beyond words. I know try to picture that. And, it's incredible. She called the 911. He was, his name is Jose Ibarra. And what made it even more despicable was his lack of emotion on the courtroom. He just had no emotion, no facial expression. I mean, he was as if he was disconnected, and he was convicted of multiple charges: malice murder, felony murder, kidnapping with bodily injury, aggravated assault with intent to rape. See, I did not know that. I assumed he had raped her, but it was intent to rape, aggravated battery, obstructing an emergency call, evidence tampering. And they even got him on being a peeping Tom, as silly as that sounds. I mean, they threw the book at him. I you know, somebody mentioned it, and right or wrong, I don't think he was leaving that courtroom without being charged with something based off all that evidence. It was a clear-cut case. And the violent crimes by undocumented immigrants, I mean, they're raising alarms, as Roxanne, as you pointed out. And you have the newly ousted district attorney, George Gascon. I can't remember it, but he lost by 20 or 30 points. And he was part of the process of making L.A. at least appear to be a sanctuary city. Now, I did some research.
Order 40 for a while, right? So the sheriff's department, it's been very clear that criminals get away with murder, literally, of all stripes, documented, undocumented, whatever. Like, if you want to commit a crime, right, Come down to L.A. But we have a new district attorney, and voters passed Prop 36 overwhelmingly, even in L.A., almost 70 points. So people have had enough, but this is what we have to, and you don't want to make, I mean, Laken, my heart breaks for Laken and for her family. And to have that be the knowledge that your daughter was fighting like that for her life in her last moments would be haunting forever. But this is who the Democrats want to support. People like Jose Ibarra, they don't care about us. They care about the world.
Right. No, I agree wholeheartedly. We'll go first to G, then to Annette. G, I did some research on this, and New York City and Los Angeles are the two biggest illegal alien drop-offs, or where they tend to go to. Rapes in New York City, rapes increased by 30% from 123 to 160 in October. Murders increased by 21%. And in L.A., there's no data available for the rapes, but the murders increased by about 10%. What are your thoughts, first of all, on the brutality of Riley fighting for 17 minutes and on the district attorney, George Gascon? I guess I'm just asking both of you, what are your thoughts on this, on sanctuary cities in L.A. after this Blake and Riley incident?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't imagine the horror that she had in her last minutes of life. I mean, what did the Democrats think? We're letting monks across the border? Yeah, Benedictine monks. Like,
Benedictine,
these guys are not eunuchs, right? They've got urges, just like every other person does. And then they come across the border, maybe alone, or maybe with some of them with a gang, from Venezuela or whatnot. And they've got they're going to, it's terrible. It's going to come out in some way, in some fashion, right? And she's the victim of one of these guys. And they all talk too, right? So Trump gets elected, and then there was a whole caravan that's coming up through Mexico, and they turned around and went home.
Yes.
So they're all talking, right? The news travels fast. So news travels fast that Trump's going to crack down. They're like, we better not go up there. But news also travels fast that, hey, if you're convicted of a rape, they'll probably let you go. Or maybe they'll just let you go across the border, and then you go live like a free man, down in Mexico or back at your country of origin or whatnot. So, I mean, it's terrible. I watched a video maybe a year ago, and I believe these officers were at an apartment complex, and someone was filming with a cell phone video, and the police officers were saying, we can't arrest this person, we can't do anything about it, because we're a sanctuary city. So whatever this guy did, oh well. And it's not like the police didn't want to do anything. They were just bound by the laws that, Gavin Newsom has put into place. And I believe that was up in the Bay Area. But, if Gavin Newsom, I mean, obviously he's going out there doing press conferences now saying, I care about Trump people. You know, he's already started his presidential campaign. If he wants to stand a chance of winning, he needs to get rid of these sanctuary city laws, because that's right. Not going to win the heartland. Period.
Right. I think that was New York City. You know what made me – the only thing that made me happy about that scene, it was black New Yorkers were the ones who were like, you're not going to arrest me. You got to do anything. And the reason that was important to me was like, you're seeing it firsthand how these people are destroying. It's time to look at the Democrat Party and go, what the bleep? So that if there's any saving grace out of that whole scene there, it was that. Because for me, it's important for Latinos and blacks to see firsthand what I've been predicting since the 1990s was going to happen is now happening. Ms. Annette, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I agree with you that I thought the only emotion that Jose emoted was apathy. And that was weird to see somebody so disconnected and so apathetic to something so heinous and cruel. I don't think that I profess to understand that. And I think that they were right to throw the book at him to say we're starting to take some of these things really seriously. And so I think the response to that is to say, now we have this sanctuary city, we're going to protect criminals. I mean, this is just, I think people that are even liberal minded in their thinking don't think that that kind of protection is the right way to go. And I think it makes them feel scared and uncomfortable in their neighborhoods. And I think they're just, it's like a tactic to use to basically say, like, we're not going to go along with Trump and him cracking down on all this. We're going to say that you can be here illegally and that's okay. You're protected. I mean, that's a weird thing to say. Think about it. Even like if you say that, like, with your children and your family, we're going to let you get
right.
away. You know what I'm saying? Like, take it into a really small scale. It's like that kind of behavior has to have consequences for us to all live in a civil society. And are we not civilized anymore?
Right. Well, no, we're headed towards not being civilized the last 4 years at the minimum. To me, it started right around 2008 with the election of Obama and in terms of how the Democrats took the power, because he had a mandate and they ran with it, you know. So, Roxanne, you brought up an important point, because when I was doing my research on this, I saw the vote is 13-0, but there's 16 council members, aren't they? Some of the comments, Karen Bass, the mayor of L.A., this moment demands urgency. Immigrant protections make our community stronger and our city better. The data says otherwise. We know that. Councilman Bob Blumenfield, we know there is a target on our back from the president-elect. We are hardening our defenses in the face of Trump's election. To me, that's just rhetoric. He's spewing hateful rhetoric. But here's the big thing that they don't understand. Trump did no campaigning at all in California. And he improved his share to about 40%, a 5-point increase in 2020. And in Los Angeles,
he did one rally at the end.
But in essence,
Coachella, right?
Right. But in essence, in LA, he even had a 10-point improvement. So the writing's on the wall, Roxanne. What can you tell us, though, about any idea why some of the councilmen weren't there? Do they represent districts that maybe weren't aligned with what the vote was? Any thoughts on that?
LA is crazy. Right. I'll admit it. Like, forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown. They're talking about LA. And our two council members who missed, Tracy Park is ostensibly, you know, it's a nonpartisan position, but she has had a good head on her shoulders. And John Lee was a Republican and then, became a decline to state voter once he got elected with endorsement of the LA GOP. So I think it's just a matter of people not having huevos. Like, there's no bravery at all. And it's really unbelievable to me that in Southern California, all we need to say to people to make them understand is, what do you think would happen if you jumped the fence at Disneyland? When they catch you, do they let you ride on A Small World over and over again? Do they reward you with a lifetime season pass? Do you become an annual pass member for free because you jumped the line? No, your ass is kicked out and you were put on a list never to be elect back into Disneyland again. And I think there's no pathway to home ownership for people who break into my house. There should be no pathway to citizenship for people who break into the country. Yes, I know there are lots of sweet abuelas out there who have been here for many years. If you'd like to make yourself legal by going back to your country of origin, paying restitution, and applying to come back in as a resident alien, and these are all terms of law, yes. But citizenship, off the table. And what President Trump is trying to do is start with the worst of the worst, with criminals. And California Democrats have said, oh, no, we stand with the criminals.
Yes, you know, you're right. They have said that. And again, the tide is changing. The California Republican Party has to figure out how to take advantage of this, because I'll be the first to push back. Our party did nothing to help ride this wave out, as we talked about last week in one of our local elections. But that said, at this point, the Democrats are their own worst enemy, Gene. If they keep this road up, if they keep going hard, huevitos to the wall, how bad would this hurt them in 2022? Because traditionally, midterm elections are when 2026. Oh my gosh, yeah, you're right. That's what I've been writing all day long, 2022. In 2026, traditionally, the opposing party ends up taking control of the House, but that's kind of changed up a bit recently. How bad could this hurt them if the Democrats in California do not sit there and watch their words?
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to, if immigration is the number one issue in 2026, and they're opposing Trump, but every little venture that he tries to do, like deporting criminals, I think it's going to hurt them. If the issue is something different, then traditionally the opposition party does gain in the House and the Senate. But this absolutely will hurt them. So I know the Democrat playbook right now is going to be, let's get some iPhones out And when the people come to deport, these little children crying, place it all over MSNBC, if it's still MSNBC. It sounds like it's going to be something different. liberal NBC or whatever, but MS Liberal. But no, it's going to be, they're already gearing up to make this, you know, pictures of Elian Gonzalez, right? Remember that guy?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's probably 30 some odd years old now, but when he was 8. and now that was used as a tool against Clinton, right? I mean, that was used as a tool against the Democrats. But they've got that playbook ready to go. And if they overplay their hand, I mean, it can be effective, but if they overplay their hand, it will hurt them in 2 years.
I think that's why I say, Annette, we must use Lincoln Riley, as the face of this. And I disagree with my producer, Big John, who just chimed in. He says the GOP is screwed. If that does happen, and there's always that potential, that is the battle ahead, but we are in a different era. These murders are now making front page news all across the country. There's a growing tide. This happened, Big John, our producer, forgets. This happened in the 90s. You know, everybody was today, or the last couple of years, was against that Biden law. But that had the support of everyone across the country, from the people to the politicians, including black politicians, you know. And that's kind of where we're at. We want to We want law and order. And here's something about California and Latinos who are here legally. Most of us who have, I didn't flee, but most Latinos who flee and most Africans who flee here, they flee for one major reason. They love the fact we are a country of law and order versus the cartels running into Central South America, having all these rebellions where they literally chop you up in Africa, where they have child labor issues in the diamond mines and the cobalt mines now, you know, for our electric cars. So it's a different era. I'm not saying our producer, Big John, is wrong. I'm saying that we've got to watch our optics because, you know, perception is reality, but it's a different mentality. So I just don't know if the Republican Party has the capacity. But Tom Homan, that was another one I saw this week, where when they asked him, I saw my video, he was literally in tears. He was like, I'm just tired of it. I am tired of it. After 30 years seeing what's happening, seeing innocent people brutally murdered, I'm tired of it. You can see it was more than a job for him. It's as if his life's work was going up. Any final words on this before we move on? We'll start with you, Ms. Roxanne.
I'm a legal immigrant. I became a citizen in 2000. And to give over this country to people who broke the law multiple times is, I hope, anathema to the majority of Americans. And it'll trickle to California, too.
Ms. Annette, any final words on this? The brutality of the murder on L.A., what's your thoughts?
Well, I love the Disney analogy, and I think the two words we're talking about are legal versus illegal. I don't think anybody here in this group would say that someone who, an immigrant who was here and they were here illegally, they don't have a right to be here in this country and try to fight for the American dream. I don't think any of us are saying that. And I think we have to make that distinction each and every time that the people we're talking about have come here illegally, and something that's illegal has to be prosecuted as such and treated like it is a crime.
Right. And it's funny because the Democrats had a change of heart. Something happened at the turn of the century where I think they saw the numbers. We get these illegals to come here, we make them citizens, they're going to vote for us. Because if you look back at video, G, back in the 80s and even into the 90s, all these Democrats were like, we got to control our borders, we got to do this. Your final words before we move on.
If I jump the fence and they said come back at 5 p.m. and be kicked out, I'll be jumping the fence every single time. I will never pay for another ticket ever again.
Oh, dear God. Those tickets are what, 70, 80? I haven't gone in years.
It's 120 now.
120,
yeah. I haven't gone. And I have, you know, that's a good point. I'd be jumping every day too, you know. And this is a touchy situation. Because the Democrats have the media on their side. They're going to play on that with the video. How the Republicans handle that will be the key to how successful this is. But at the end of the day, if you do look at Trump's book, he says you come in. And that's one of the things, one of the few things I remember about his book. You come in with an unrealistic demand to start the negotiations. You know, so this is not a done deal. For those of you who think it's going to be every 10 million gone, that's more than likely not going to happen. But let's move on here. Let's take a look back at COVID. COVID is not forgotten, but it is in what's it saying? Behind us, behind our wind, our
in the rearview mirror.
There you go. Thank you, Mr. Rockstead, in the rearview mirror. However, there are court cases that are still going on. People are fighting back. I want to mention Lisa Domsky was awarded $13 million after being fired for refusing a COVID-19 vaccine. Now, get this, guys. She worked remotely. She's very religious, I guess. And they said, no, senorita, you're going to come in and you're going to get your shot. You know, and they terminated her. She'd been there for 38 years. They were trying to set an example, you know. I think she got $10 million in punitive damage, nearly $2 million for lost wages, $1 million in non-economic damages. I'm not a lawyer, and I should have looked that up, but I didn't. But I found that one curious. Then there is Ian Smith and Frank Trombetti. They had a multi-year legal war. I think these are the guys that were on Tucker all the time on Fox News. They were the co-owners of a gym in New Jersey. They were cleared of over 80 charges because they wouldn't shut down. In fact, there was one point where they were arresting the patrons coming out of the gym, and the case was dismissed. They suffered $270,000 in damage. And if you're a small business like that, you know, that's probably money you did not have. You had to borrow, cheat, and steal to get to pay those. So they're looking for retribution. Oh, they haven't said retribution. The compensation is the term they use. I use retribution. So before I get your guys' comments, the reason these gym owners fought so hard is because they were highlighting the hypocrisy. You know, there was the Denver mayor, Michael Hancock. He told residents to stay home for Thanksgiving, but then flew to Mississippi for his family at Thanksgiving. Austin Mayor Steve Adler posted a video urging people to stay home while he's in Cabo San Lucas vacationing. You know, our own wonderful Gavin Newsom. We all know the high-end restaurant, the French restaurant. Andrew Cuomo, another one, and D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser traveled to Delaware for an election party. So the hypocrisy was there. Roxanne, let's start with you. Obviously, these cases highlight the hypocrisy, but it seems to be a growing trend. Is this going to be a lesson for corporations? But what about the mid-tier businesses who were doing the same thing and they get sued? I mean, is there a balance or screw them? They try to screw us?
First of all, where was the sanctuary for the people who wanted to refuse the vaccine? And that's, I think, when you say hypocrisy, and I like to say that too, someone reminded me once, it's not hypocrisy, it's hierarchy. They want to let you know that they don't have to follow rules that we have to follow. And that just like illegal immigrants don't have to follow the rules that legal immigrants do, they get to do whatever they want. And so I'm normally not a litigious person. I don't like overly large rewards, but on this case, burn it all down. I was actually a plaintiff in a lawsuit that attorney Julie Hamill brought on behalf of the Alliance of LA County Parents against LA Department of Public Health, which did more to completely capriciously close down schooling, including private schooling here in Los Angeles. And what they did was at a certain point, they cut off public comment on their social media accounts. Yeah. But this highlights one of the difficulties of lawfare. Our judge, so they removed most of the most of our lawsuit because they said, well, if the CDC said it, it's guidance. I mean, what were they supposed to do? Notwithstanding the fact that they helped make the guidance, right, and it was completely made up out of whole cloth. But so at the end, we were left with a free speech case because of the lack of public comment. And in discovery, found out that they had gone after a journalist, KABC's John Phillips, who called Barbara Ferrer the fake doctor because she is. She's a doctor like Jill Biden is a doctor. Between the two of them and a bunch of scalpels, they could not open you up and take care of you at all. And they went to Chuck Schumer's office and asked for help from that office through Twitter to silence him, I was banned from Twitter. We had amazing discovery. We didn't get everything we wanted, but the judge didn't understand the difference between an email, a website, and a social media account. So at the end of the day, any and everyone who can get their case through and gets a payout, enjoy. Have a wonderful time finding your yacht in the med, because you deserve it. Because what was done to people was medical apartheid. It was complete bullying, and it was also big pharma could profit. And I, for one, would like to see it all burn down.
You know, I love that term there. That's a term you got to use at an intellectual party, though. That is medical apartheid.
That was good. Yes,
that's a good one. So, geez, when all this happened, my first thought was, and I'm not a simple guy. I'm college educated, but I come from the working class. I mean, I go home, everything's barrio, you know. It was just logical. It was first of all, oh God, thank God there's a vaccine, but will it stop COVID? And what's in it? You know, and then I saw that stat, 90% recovery rate in seniors and, you know, literally in the high 90s for kids. And I was like, at that moment, I told my wife, I said, babe, we're not taking this vaccine. It's one of the very, 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 very few times I've gone to my wife without, we're not discussing this. We're not taking it. And she was in full agreement. And so it never made sense for me. So then when I saw this medical apartheid, indeed, in terms of them firing people, of completely ignoring Christian religious values. And I get it. There's some people who weren't religious who just threw that up. You know, that always happens. But there's some people who were really religious who they said no to. What are your thoughts on this? Do you align with Ms. Roxanne? Damn them all. Give them all the money they can get out of this? Or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Democrats, it's my body, my choice, unless it's something that they want to impose on you, right? And it's a dreamland. It just feels like we're in a bizarro land for about 2 years. And it reminds me of this time I went to Portugal for work in September of 2021. And I was on the bottom of this ferry boat with a lot of air coming through with me and my coworker. And there was one other person in this 200-seat, you know, ferry, and she's on the other side. I mean, literally like 40 feet away from me. And I take my mask off and she yells at me in Portuguese. And
oh man,
she's pointing and I clearly know, okay, she wants to tell me to put my mask back on. And I just kind of look at her and my coworker's like, look, you're in a foreign country. Just put your mask back on. Let's not have any trouble. I'm like, okay.
Well, she's right, though. She's right in that sense.
He was right. So I put it on because I just didn't want any trouble. But then, you know, the three of us remember Nathan Fletcher, right? He was giving us instructions on how to have Thanksgiving in November of 2020 with our family. And this is how you do it. And open the windows and wear masks and all that. And we're like, what? Looking back, it was totally bizarro land. So these people who were fired, whose businesses were shut down, I mean, they need to get all the money they can and win the litigation. Like the gym owners, they need to get all their attorney's fees back. I mean, what was it, $250,000 at least? They need to get all that back from the government. I mean, if the government can hand out money to, you know, green, clean energy companies, they can certainly pay these guys back. For a small business like that, $250,000 is a lot of money.
Right, right. Ms. Annette, what are your thoughts? Do you agree? I want to throw this caveat out there. I agree with both Roxanne and G, but at the end of the day, we end up having to foot the cost anyway because the payouts for the non-corporations, but for the government, for example, are going to come from us, taxes. What are your thoughts with people who bring that up?
Well, okay. You're having me last all the time now, William. So all the great points get taken, although Roxanne, that was so good. I wish I would have thought of that myself. But what have I said before, William, that the greatest tyranny inflicted upon people is the one that's supposedly for your own good, that they say is for your own good, inflict, you know. So that comes to mind when we're talking about this issue. And it has been a sort of a fascinating sociological experiment, I guess, to see people even today, November, whatever it is, 22nd, walking around. I saw two people walking outside with masks on. I thought,
oh my gosh, yeah, I still see those once in a while, yeah.
And I thought to myself, wow, it reminded me of that poem, T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland, and he talks about how some people are like sheep, just doing as other people do. Like, they don't have a certain ability of, like, the autonomy to be able to think for themselves. However, this was really truly a trick. Because, look, I told you guys about Francis Collins' book that I have sitting right behind me where he's talking about COVID. And he's talking about how he's saying, from a position of running the NIH, that they were doing what was best for the American people. So you and convincing people that they're the authorities there, they know what's best for you. And so you're in for people who think, what do I know about infectious disease? What do I know about viruses? I've got to listen to the authorities here. I mean, look at the conundrum, honestly, that we were in. No, is that a fair thing to bring up both sides? I think it is. I didn't get the vaccine, but I come from a skeptical place in medicine, being hurt from a doctor who was on drugs and being lied to from the institution itself. And I'm like, wow, they could lie to me, and they did. So I'm like, then they could lie to anybody. So I come from a skeptical place anyway.
That's a good point, because I didn't realize that maybe that's where I get my why's, because I saw two dictators subjugate my family. And I always felt sad because I was an American citizen and got to go home. And even as a child, I knew I wasn't subjugated. But the fact that they were, I immediately recognized that. And maybe that's always been in the back of my head in a subconscious way, because I am a why. Go ahead, G. You want
to? Yeah. I was going to say that, to Annette's point, we're not experts, but how quickly are we ready as a human race? I'm not talking about Americans, but as a human race, to turn our neighbor in for not wearing a mask. Right? I mean, now you wonder, I always wondered, how does Weimar Republic turn into Nazi Germany? We saw how it happens. It happens
that's slowly a good
or
point.
Quickly. Yeah.
That's a good
point. You're not wrong, but what the experts did was they destroyed the trust of the people in the institutions they run, because they took their expertise. And if you go back and you look even at Deborah Birx's book, which she confessed to, I'm like, that woman should be in jail. They decided that the American people, it was too complicated to say something that, by the way, everyone has known since Plato's time. The entire history of human immunology is, once you get the disease, you are less susceptible to it. So the fact that there were no exemptions, they wanted to make no exemptions because they said, we really need to get this vaccine into everybody, which was, if you thought about it for a second, you would realize, wait, you have a shortage of vaccines. If people are truly vulnerable and it's truly helpful, you shouldn't give it to someone who's had COVID already. You should save it for the really vulnerable, because it's going to save them. So that schism alone, and to G's point, Jesse Kelly says it all the time, if you would have ever wondered if you would have turned in Anne Frank, now you know. And all those beep.
Well, that, beep, you know, that's that nobody knows. Nobody knows. Some people believe her own neighbors. I mean, another Jewish couple turned them. I mean, nobody knows.
No, but I'm saying we know where we would have stood. We were the resistance.
Right. No, I just, when you said Anne Frank, I was shocked. I was like, wow, they turned her in. I was like, you know, because it's been decades, and I just reread that about a year ago, the whole story, and then, you know, I had forgotten that. I was like, holy mackerel. All right, well, let's talk about some of these COVID studies. There's now they're finally starting to come to light. You know, they were censored. They were blocked. I got in an argument with our producer once. He did not want RFK Jr. to debate, what's his name? Peter Herzog, or, oh, you know the name?
Yes, he's a doctor and he was a jerk.
He didn't want him to debate it. I mean, that was like, you know, we have to debate, you know, and I understood why, because RFK Jr., he's a lawyer, he's a great debater. Well, Peter the doctor was just a great masturbator, is all I could think of. You know, he just did not strike me as a man, to be quite honest. Yes, I'm being very chauvinistic, but I looked at him and I saw, you are the geek that took over the world, and now we're having to pay the price. You know, so there's been a surge in heart attacks among fit young people. I want to give a hat tip to the Daily Mail Online liberal paper, but they had a great article on this, breaking it down. And the thing about Daily Mail, they have some in-depth articles. But this was based off a study that there's been a significant increase in heart attacks among young, fit individuals, with many cases occurring in those who are otherwise healthy. Now, I've covered sports for 20 years. Or I'm sorry, since the 90s. I've been watching sports since I was a little kid, but I've been covering it. And I remember, again, going to my producer, you know, he said, well, those are rare and all that. And I remember telling him, I was like, yeah, but I haven't seen this many, you know, in 20 years that I've seen in the past 6 months, you know. And it was a 66% rise in heart attacks among young people that has been reported. This is everybody across the board, not just athletes. And the pandemic is obviously the big suspect with this trend, as COVID can cause myocarditis and inflammation, increasing heart risk. And we're going to get into a little bit more detail into that with a video from Peter McCullough that is stunning. Did young and fit individuals really need to take the jab? The reason I ask, I know the answer, at least to myself, is a 90% recovery rate. And I don't care if it's only 30 out of 10,000 or whatever it is. I'm like, well, do you want to be one of those 30 when you know you're going to have a high 90 percentile to recover? Miss Annette, we shall go to you first this cycle. Your thoughts. And don't tell me, oh, I missed what you said.
No, I did not. No, young, healthy people should not have taken the vaccine, and it wasn't necessary for them. To Roxanne's point, maybe they should have looked at people who had comorbidities. But did you know, to your point, what you said about, did you know there was a book called Cause Unknown that I got? And it was the rise of, wait, I wrote it down, the sudden deaths in young people since the COVID vaccine. Cause Unknown, an entire book written about it. And
yeah, I saw it anecdotally. No, what I'm just saying is that book's on the spot. And I'm not knocking the book. Please don't think that. But it's like, why does it take a book to convince certain people when we can see it in front of our eyes? And I'm not knocking the book. It's just, it's sad it comes to having a book to see what should have been common sense, I think.
But young athletic people falling down and dropping dead, literally. I think of all people that it shouldn't have been forced upon, it was these students, these children, these people going to college, and you can't get back. If you don't get your vaccine, you can't go back to school, you can't go back to college. That was actually something that was a real thing. They wouldn't let you go back to school. I mean, and these are young, healthy people that shouldn't have been anywhere around that vaccine. And now so many of them regret it. I remember my daughter could not go back to school at Syracuse unless she got the vaccine, and she was calling me in line to get the vaccine, crying. Is there anything we can do? But there was not even like a religious exemption. There was nothing I could try to like talk to them or argue another point. It was either like, you have to be home and do school, or you've got to go back and you got to get the vaccine. That was her choice there at that time.
No, it's tough. You know, I have mixed feelings about those decisions. I used to sit there and say, no, I understand. But now I have mixed feelings because history has shown it's always a few, and we end up becoming martyrs before we actually live to get to see the ending in most cases throughout history. So, and I'm not knocking anybody. I understand some people felt forced. But at the end of the day, I'm like, it was still your decision. You know, and what I mean by that is there are others in your same position.
I'm going to correct you on that. People were forced. It was not anyone's decision. It is not a decision when you say, hey, do what you want. Like, you can either have a job and feed your family or not. That is classic coercion. And in the medical field and medical ethics, informed consent does not include coercion like that at all, and especially not for young people. And I'm sorry, I get really worked up about this. By the way, you said something important earlier, William. You said, you know, people jumped on the bandwagon to try and get religious exemptions and they weren't really religious. Well, I'm sorry. Right now, the entirety of the left is letting men with penises into ladies' room because they feel like a woman. So if somebody wanted to say, I feel like I have a religious exemption to COVID, have at it, right?
I'm not saying it was wrong. I'm just saying, though, that was the other side of the argument. Well, you're not really religious, and it's tough for me to defend that person. But I get your point. I see that. That's why I have mixed feelings. You know, it's easy for me to sit there and say that. You know, I have a little bit of money in the bank, and my wife is self-employed, too. So our situations were different. Maybe I would have chosen differently had I been working for a corporation, earning six figures, had four kids to feed. You know, so to each their own. But that's why I have mixed feelings. I'm not going to sit there and not say otherwise. When I used to say otherwise, I understand. But I think every situation is different. Gee, your thoughts on this?
Well, Annette and I, for those who don't know, we're part of a school district board. And we were Annette was recently reelected earlier this month. But back in December 2021, yay, I believe it was, we voted on saying, no, you're not going to jab our kids as a precondition to coming back to school. And we sent a resolution up to Sacramento saying we're not going to comply with that. And I don't remember if it just didn't pass the legislature or Newsom just didn't sign it. But either way, we just said we're not going to do this. So mm-hmm. Your question was, do young and fit individuals need to take the jab? And the answer is obviously no. But I was one of those young and fit individuals who did take the jab because I just wanted to return to normal. Like this was bizarro land. And it's like, maybe now this is like my little passport to say, I got my papers to the SS who's coming around saying, do you get to live normal? And so
no,
that's
you're right.
Why I did it. But now not only the myocarditis, but Dr. John Campbell from London or England, he was a well-known YouTuber, still is, covering the whole COVID thing. He was talking about the rise of turbo cancers. And I'm just hearing over and over again, these cancers stage 4 out of nowhere. And it's like in the last 2-3 years. So I hope there's some studies done on it, but I don't think there will be because there will be a lot of money paid out to people who got those turbo cancers.
Those studies will be done. They'll be done somewhere. In fact, anecdotally speaking, my wife just actually mentioned that about a month ago. She goes, honey, I've never seen more of my clients now getting cancer. She goes, before it'd be like one or a couple every, 6-7 years. She goes, I've had like 5 just the past year and a half, And she's not saying they're jab, but she, to me, I call those red flags. So let's move on. But that's a study I did not look into.
William, I did finish one thing that I was fortunate enough to be, to get to meet Dr. Jay Bhattacharya of the Great Barrington Declaration.
Oh, yeah.
And because of our work, do a lot of stuff with Team Reality, actually out of San Diego. Justin Hart wrote a book about COVID and been really – so I just want to give you the original WHO estimate of the infection fatality rate for COVID, which scared the living Jesus out of everybody, was 3.4%. And what it is for people under 19, IFR is 0.00003. That means for young people, they had a 99.997% survival rate. And when it goes up a bit each decade, when you get to 70 and over, the survival rate was 94.6. The IFR was 0.054%. It was, yes, a real respiratory virus that attacked the epithelial and the thrombotic systems of the body. And it was fatal for people who were mostly over the age of life expectancy in long care term facilities and with multiple comorbidities, including obesity, heart conditions, and diabetes.
Right.
And so people in charge, the experts, knowingly lied to us and said everyone was at equal risk. So that's why G took the jab, and many other people do, and I don't fault them one bit, because we were lied to. So my ire is saved for those experts, and I got to read, because I was trying to get, like Annette was, I was trying to get an exemption for a booster for my daughter, and I read the plan for higher education with COVID. That thing read like a marketing 101 book. It literally said, recruit football players and cheerleaders and sports stars and sorority and fraternity brothers to promote the vaccine. If that thing had worked, there would have been no need for a promotion plan. We would have been all falling all over each other.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah, if it was truly dangerous. And, before we go on to the next study, 2 points on that. My dad is 92 in about a month. We caught COVID at the family reunion. And then we told my dad says, oh, geez, I'm done. because he's 92. But he said it like, well, y'all gotta go. I just found it. I laughed out loud at my sister because we had this death there because she's a nerd, but she's bought a paper. I got so angry because her and I were fighting where I just, I looked online, got a plane ticket, went from North Carolina, just flew out the next day. I'm not dealing with this. And the other thing is they're trying to make it one, they're trying to make it, inoculation number 74 for kids, the COVID jab, you know? So no, I agree. So let's move on. You mentioned cerebral thrombotic. So let's talk about cerebral thrombotic syndromes, which is blood clots in the brain. We're moving on a little bit slower than I want here, but good stuff. So I want to get to a couple of points here. The key findings of this study, a hat tip goes to the International Journal of Innovative Research in Medical Science, COVID-19 vaccines, a risk factor for cerebral thrombotic syndrome. The incidence is 5,100 cases of thromboembolism were reported following COVID-19 vaccination or 3 years, and they were comparing it to other vaccines, 52 to influenza, 282 cases for all other vaccines over 34 years. I mean, that's beyond a red flag. That's like, stop. What are we doing type numbers, you know? Now here's where it's scary is if you're a woman in reproductive stage. The study says one of the things that they came out and said, first, they said there should be an immediate global moratorium on the use of COVID-19 vaccines. But secondly, it was, and I had to look this up because I thought it was a misspelling, but a specific contraindication. Which means, in essence, I thought it was contradiction. I'm like, what the heck? That makes no sense. So I looked the word up, and what it means is the drug should not be used for women of reproductive age is what it was saying. So we're not talking about a few differences in similarities here, but thousands in differences. Women are also more vulnerable, and there's something to be said about the reproductive age. My wife has told me she's done some reading up on that, and she's saying that women are having issues along those lines, but she's just hearing that from friends, you know? And it can also cause atrial fibrillation, and that has a recovery rate of over 90%, if I'm correct. But that can cause stroke, that can cause other issues. So to me, it's like, I agree, put a moratorium with 90% rate. What are your thoughts on this? I will go with G, then we'll close this segment out with Ms. Roxanne.
Yeah, I mean, in the middle of a pandemic, maybe there's justification to say, okay, look, we need to just stop the spread, get some herd immunity going, which by now we do have. So at this point, there should be, you know, when you watch the, I guess RFK Jr. wants to do away with them, but the pharmaceutical ads on TV, and then talk at like 100 miles an hour, like a auctioneer on steroids. They should do that with the COVID stuff, right? Like, oh, by the way, it can cause turbo cancers, what is this? The thrombotic syndrome? I mean, yeah, it can cause stroke, turbo cancers, and heart attacks. I bet the incidence of people getting this vaccine would go down to zero.
And at the end of the day, and by the way, you can still catch COVID.
Yes.
Yeah, Mr. I'm sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead, finish your thought before we go in there.
No, so CVS is still sending me emails. Get your COVID-19 vaccine now, and I'm just like.
and Roxanne, what you said earlier, or was it Annette, about the players? When you said about the, you know, with the shooters and players, the first person I thought was Jason Kelce was a Pfizer. You know, I got so angry at him. I'm like, oh, because I'm like, it's not necessary, the vaccine. You know, there's no reason for it. Annette, your thoughts on this study, specifically Annette, you're a mother of five. I'd like to hear from both you and Roxanne, and the fact that this says for women in the reproductive years. Which I don't know what those are technically, you know, but that don't take this vaccine.
Well, I think that you do hear, and it is, again, anecdotally, but let me just say, just, and G, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I won't name any names, our five-person board, everybody got vaccinated but me in 2020 when the vaccine came out. One person got a serious heart problem, and three of you guys got cancer. Did you not?
I can't put my thyroid tumor to that because I don't know when that started growing. But yeah, I found it a year later. Big thyroid tumor right here. I had it taken out.
And that was five of us. I was the only one who didn't get vaccinated. And the one person got a terrible heart AFib and had to get a defibrillator like planted in their chest. Okay, that's just like anecdotal. I know that. But I will also say that for my daughters, my 26-year-old daughter's friends, who are some of them now getting married, trying to have children, the ones who got vaccinated, having a heck of a time, having a hard time getting pregnant. I mean, that's like the easiest. I feel like I couldn't not get pregnant.
With five kids. Yeah, it looks that way.
but no, I think there are, again, and I wonder if some of these things will be studied. And I wonder if they'll be honest about some of the data.
Annette, that's a great point, is some of these will be studied. Miss Roxanne, I remember when I was talking to Big John, he and I talk a lot, you know, and we were talking about this. And it's not that I take a black and white stance. Personally, I do. But I understand it's a bigger picture, bigger world. And to me, it's like when Damar Hamlin went down, the guy, it was like this. He's all over the ground dead, literally. You know, I'm like, those are red flags. I'm not saying he got it because he had the jab, but I'm like, we need to investigate this. Our premier athletes are dropping, just dropping like rocks, you know? So, and my issue is always studies, cases, and not to take years, but to do legit studies. What are your thoughts on the fact that the studies were suppressed early on, or doctors weren't even allowed to go, this is what I'm seeing with my patients. In fact, there's a couple of doctors in Barstow that happened to, you know?
The studies were not done. They stopped the studies. First of all, the wisdom, the pandemic plan, you do not vaccinate your way out of a pandemic, right? You do not. Now, I understand the impetus for Warp Speed. They were desperate to help people in vulnerable populations. But the fact is, it had never been tried before. Second of all, I know a little something about sudden athlete death syndrome. My uncle was the captain of the Cornell soccer team and keeled over in practice in Jamaica in 1959, I think. Somewhere like that. Age 21, perfectly healthy. So when my son started playing really high-level basketball, we went and got, you know, multiple EKGs and looked for long QT syndrome and the things that lead up to that. The devastation that was wrought upon young people, athletic, in the prime of their life, to tell them that the only way they could play the game they loved, that for many people was a ticket to college, to a future, to companionship, was to take an unnecessary vaccine. I hope everyone behind those decisions burns in hell. And I am not mincing my words. Literally burns in hell. And then lastly, when you talk about the side effects for women, first of all, what is a woman? Who's to say? But I find it very interesting, as she said, that every single other medical product comes with a list of warnings. Hell, in California, you can't pump gas without reading a sign that says, this gas station contains products that may produce cancer. I'm at the gas station. I know that. Like, I'm in the world. And they said to women who were pregnant, this is perfectly safe.
And necessary.
I remember that.
If you lit a cigarette for someone and you were visibly pregnant, five cops would come tackle you. In fact, the other day I got on a plane in Burbank, and they have an outdoor carousel at Burbank Airport, right? So the luggage is coming. It's outdoor. You're cold.
Oh, it looks like we lost Miss Roxanne. Is that me or you guys?
She's on a roll.
Yes, she was. Yes, she was. Okay, well, when she gets back on, we'll let her finish her thought. Let's move on here while we wait for Ms. Hogue to come back on. Dr. Peter McCullough, there's another study, and the study it pretty much kind of said, hey, your kids, that 99-point-some-odd percentage does not really warrant, you know, even though it's rare, that something serious will happen. You know, that was what the study kind of concluded. So let's move on to Dr. Peter McCullough, one of the doctors who was censored for speaking truths. Now, Dr. McCullough had a cardiology fellowship at William Beaumont Hospital. He served as a chief fellow, vice chief of internal medicine at Baylor University Medical Center, who tried to burn him and censor him even further. He has over 1,000 publications with more than 500 citations in the National Library of Science, the recipient of the Simon Dack Award for the American College of Cardiology, received the International Vicenza Award in Critical Care Nephrology. He's known for his work in chronic kidney disease as a cardiovascular risk and has significantly contributed to the field, He's one of the most published on COVID-19 treatments, and that's where the negative side on him comes in. So he was attacked early on. Mikola was labeled as spreading misinformation by fact-checking organizations, and we've seen how that has turned out. He faced repercussions. He was criticized for promoting hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, which we now know does work in conjunction with other treatments, censorship and deplatforming. So that's who he is in a nutshell. When you hear somebody of this pedigree and then you hear he's being censored, what are your initial thoughts there, Ms. Annette? And you've read a couple of books on this stuff. So when you, I mean, we're looking at hindsight. But I look at somebody like him. See, that was my first thing, was like, why are they censoring all these doctors? You know, and then to see somebody of that pedigree censored, and then his Baylor went after him because he was sitting there saying, yeah, I was this and that at Baylor. They were like, don't you dare use our name, you know, because they didn't want to be associated at all. What are your thoughts?
That's right. And I think some doctors actually were so afraid to speak out against it, but had those exact same feelings. I follow a doctor. I think it's Asim Malhotra. Maybe I'm saying his name wrong. His father died after getting the vaccine. He was convinced, his healthy father, who they would go on long walks together, very close relationship, and had some, like, again, drop dead experience. And he was so mystified by it. And then he made the connection to the vaccine and did a bunch of, and then sort of started to come out and talk about it openly. And he was chastised, and he was, lost colleagues, and people wrote badly about him. And he was, again, another person who was very respected in his, I think he was also a cardiologist, very respected in his profession. And just because he had this experience that he wanted to look into and see, is there a connection here? And then he starts to, like, look underneath, you know, underneath the carpet, he saw that a lot of things were happening. There was a problem, he started to believe, with the vaccine. He was drawing these conclusions, and he was literally became like the plague in his profession of medicine. And he kept on, he kept the megaphone out there. And, right. You know, now it's all changed, right? Now it's okay. But then early on, and so he was, I don't know, the deplatformed, because X wasn't X then, right?
Twitter, yeah, they were all deplatformed.
They were deplatformed, and I was always trying to hear what he was trying to say, and I would see him on, like, thank goodness, and people have thanked these people during this election time. I would see him on a podcast, so he wasn't able to use his normal accounts, his social media accounts, because he was deplatformed. But he would get on a podcast, and I would hear him. I'm like, this guy's making sense to me. So anyway, right. What do I think about that? I mean, I think that they think we're lemmings. I think we're people who have brains and we can think for ourselves, and we can assimilate information, and we can look at our own healthcare picture, and we can decide whether or not we want to take a vaccine or not take a vaccine, or we think it works for us, or maybe we're someone who's healthy and young and wants to take a different decision. I don't know. It always scares me, William, to live in a world where those decisions are made for me. And that's what I find is a very, I know you're going to think it's crazy, but even just going to a hospital, like, as soon as you go in, it seems like when you go to the emergency room, the first thing they want to do is put an IV in you. Why are you putting an IV in me? I mean, I don't know why, but all of a sudden I'm attached to something that, unless there's a reason for me to be attached to it, I'm not interested in being attached to it. Well, just in case of what? Anyway, we could go on about this, but I think that they have things that they call protocols, and those protocols often are to make them safer and not the patient safer. Those things, sometimes the rules that they follow are about the institution and not necessarily about public safety and what's in the best interest of individuals and their healthcare. I think we should be able to make those for ourselves and for our families.
Right. My first thought when they censored Peter Mikola, well, when they were censoring all of them, I was a young kid, a party animal. I was Pete Hegseth.
Not you.
I was.
Not
yeah.
You.
And I was Matt Gaetz and Pete Hegseth rolling into one, sadly.
Uh-oh.
But I remember watching television. I was visiting my family in Panama. It was 1990. And I was watching Noriega had full control. And that was my first time as a young adult. And I realized, oh, my God, he who controlled. That's what I saw firsthand. We all study it. We all study propaganda, Germany, Italy, Japan. We all study that. And I saw it firsthand. And that's when I realized he who controls the media controls the world. Yep. And that's when people were supporting this. I'm like, you're supporting it today because you're on the side that you believe. But tomorrow they will take you out. And I was like, y'all have no freaking clue what you're doing to your own country and to your own freedoms. Miss Roxanne, we're talking about Peter McCullough, one of the first guys who was censored, who is now gaining a lot of traction. He was one of the first ones to talk about the initial warning, the potential side effects. He kept bringing up, let's not forget something we call natural immunity with COVID that works. He talked about early treatment protocols. Before we get to you and G, I want y'all to watch this video because he did his own study on individuals dropping dead. But here's what he said that first got his attention about the potential danger to others.
Got sick. When it was released, a slide from an internal NIH, CDC, FDA meeting in October of 2020, before the products finished their trials, there was a slide saying, these are the side effects that we anticipate. Myocarditis, blood clots, paralysis with Guillain-Barré syndrome, and the list goes on and on. It was fully expected and on a government public health agency slide in October of 2020. Now, they get EUA approved in December 10th of 2020, and they get released onto the market. By June of...
For the audience, EUA is Emergency Use Authorization, which allows them to bring their product without the trial testing, without 10 years worth of testing.
2021, the CDC and FDA are holding emergency meetings. It causes heart damage. Now, you know, and it'll make it worse... The people suffering heart damage, 90% were boys, and they were young. Young people in their teenage years, early 20s. And sadly, New England Journal of Medicine, first authors Verma and colleagues in the summer of 2021, reported a fatal case at Washington.
Now remember, Roxanne pointed it out. It's like that 99.99999 whatever percent of young kids don't need this.
University Medical Center in St. Louis, a fatal case in the New England Journal of Medicine. And then they started pouring in. We had Gill and colleagues, two boys, aged 16 and 17 in Connecticut. They take it on days 3 and 4 after taking one of the products. They're found dead in bed.
Oh, my
gosh. By their
gosh.
Parents. They're perfectly healthy teens.
Now, I have to pause this a little bit for copyright. That's why I'm pausing and putting points in. But the point is this is what I call an unnecessary death. The odds of that child having recovered on his own are statistically almost he would.
Teenagers found dead in bed. They demand autopsies, which is the right thing. They call in University of Michigan, University of Minnesota, pathologists they review. They conclude fatal myocarditis due to the product they took in the arm. Fatal. And then the cases started pouring in after that. And to this day, it's still not on the consent form that this product, when you take it in the arm, can cause fatal myocarditis.
That goes to what you said, Roxanne, in the sense you go to a gas station, hey, it's going to cause cancer. You pick up your cell phone, there's something in the packaging with it, it could cause cancer, you know, everything. And it's still not on the consent form. I don't want to dwell too long on this. We covered a lot on it. But he did his own study that was published in the Journal of Science, Public Health Policy, and the Law after a peer review. This isn't like something he threw together. This has gone through the shackles of science, people reviewing it, questioning it, etc. 74% of deaths were directly linked to the vaccination, confirmed by physicians as a significant contributor. Sudden cardiac arrest was the leading cause of vaccine-related deaths, accounting for 35% of the cases. Deaths occurred rapidly, averaging 14.3 days post-vaccination. I guess the only upside is if you can get past a certain amount of time, but that still doesn't rule out dangers from that. So when Roxanne, all three of you guys are parents. Let's backtrack. Had you known all this, and let's say your kids were of that age, what? And you knew it was the 99.9%. I think we all know the answer.
But G, we'll start with you there. We'll start with Roxanne. It's like you're itchy to go at this one again. What are your thoughts about this? I mean, you hear him say that in 2020.
Sorry, I dropped down there for a second. Here's the thing. I knew it. We knew it. We knew it because there was a seroprevalence study that was done in early 2020, and they collected blood samples in Santa Clara, Santa Cruz, wherever it was, and they discovered that COVID had already been, people had already been exposed. People had antibodies to it already. So we already knew that it was a disease of the very old, very sick. Yes, that happens. But guess what? Flu kills more young people than COVID did previously. And there was nowhere did it suggest to me as a parent that my kids needed this product. Now, I had two adults and two minors at home at the time. And the pressure campaign that was brought to bear on people to get their lives back, and young people, like, you'll have friends. I mean, the advertising, the propaganda, it was horrible. The two that I had control over, that I did not allow to get the vaccine because they'd had COVID, they didn't need it, returned to their private school, which LA Public Health had closed for 2 years, and they were treated like pariahs, told they were unable to go on the field trip to Moab, Utah, which is outdoors. The headmaster made an announcement that no one could get invited to the dance if they weren't vaccinated. I knew there were plenty of kids at that school with fake vax cards. And again, I understand people doing whatever they had to do, but my stance is always I'd rather die on my feet than on my knees, whatever, live on my knees. That I was not going to lie. I was going to make people discriminate against me to my face. And again, they can all burn in hell.
You know, it's funny. You're from Jamaica. I'm from Panama. I have found the strongest voices are those who we see happening here that we fled those countries from. To Annette and G, we'll go with G here first. You know, I kept saying, hey, we're becoming a banana republic. And that wasn't me just saying it. That was me looking at Panama and not getting depressed, but being so saddened that what are we doing here? Your thoughts on this, G?
Yeah, so I want to rewind back 3 years, and Annette got COVID after a watch party at a restaurant. Remember that?
Yes.
We were watching soccer, and she was out for 2 weeks. I did not hear from her for 2 weeks, and she recovered.
Yes, I
and
did.
She also said that she didn't get the vaccine, right?
Right.
So she was told, and I'm not going to say by who, but she was told that in order for her to return to our board meetings, she needs to be masked. Even though she's fully recovered and the 2 weeks have gone by. And the reason why she had to be masked is because she's not vaccinated.
Mm.
Think about that. Like, she just overcame the actual disease. She has the antibodies, but the rule says you have to be vaccinated, right? So at that time, I'm like, Annette, screw that. I mean, you come to the board meeting, you know, I don't care if you wear a mask or not. Like, you're immune as far as I'm concerned. And so my bigger point is that when the science suits the agenda, they'll tout the science. But when the left, the science gets in the way, they'll demean it. They'll throw it out. They'll say hydroxychloroquine has no effect. But we know it does have an effect because it has the same effect that quercetin has. And they were touting quercetin, but hydroxychloroquine also works that way. Ivermectin, they're saying that's a horse drug. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they started using it on horses when they found it was effective on humans. It was a human drug first. And so, you know, so when this guy didn't fit their agenda, then all of a sudden he's anti-scientific and let's bury all his research or his questioning. I mean, it's fair to question. That's what science is all about. You question. You question what is established just so that you get multiple angles of thinking. So I'm glad that he's getting more credibility nowadays.
I agree. Miss Annette, I don't mean to jump over you. I just want to keep pushing forward. So give me your thoughts on that. But real quick, I want to move to RFK Jr. here too. He has been nominated for HHS. He's been denigrated a lot for some of his past stuff. But in regards to COVID, he has some of the same questions and thoughts that we all do. It's like I align with him on COVID. I'll go to my grave. You know, I'm with him on COVID because he when I heard him talk about COVID, I'm like, you're saying what I've been asking about specifically in my own working class research has shown. So, Annette, your thoughts on Dr. Peter McCullough, but also let's segue to the RFK Jr. What are your thoughts on him possibly becoming the HHS and how he's going to deal with the trying to put COVID, for example, as a vaccine for kids? You know, what are your thoughts?
Oh, you know, I'm super excited about him. And, you know, I mean, I know he's skeptical of vaccines in general, although I have heard him say, I don't think he's trying to, you know, outlaw all vaccines. But I do think that we have an excessive number of vaccines that we are giving to our children, especially if you have take a newborn baby and before they leave the hospital, they've got to give them the hepatitis B vaccine.
Right.
Why? I mean, just give me some logical explanations for some of the things that they do. And I don't think you get those answers. So I've never let one, again, I'm one of those people, I think, who's takes it into my own hands. I will not let them vaccinate one of my babies before it leaves the hospital. No, thank you. And I always did vaccines on my own schedule where I wasn't doing 10 of them in a day because I was always very afraid of how they could potentially, and my doctor actually, thankfully, in Connecticut, agreed with me and said, you know, as a mother, if that's your instinct and that's your wisdom, then do it your way. You know, these are the things I think are most important. And, you know, and we worked on it together, but it wasn't like one of these things where it was like, this is the law. And if I don't do it, then I am either, you know, not responsible or I am a bad, you know, I have some sort of stigma, you know what I'm saying? Which is what was happening to these people. There was a stigma that if you weren't listening and you were taking a different tactic on this, that there was something wrong with you. We have a lot of problems with healthcare. I know people have problems with RFK. I personally do not. I think out of the people that were running, I thought he was the brightest. I'm sorry that he's got that voice because I think if he was able to get his message across more frequently, he would have done an even better job. He was a very strong candidate. He's a very bright mind. And I think that John and I have had conversations about this recently, not many, but we had one conversation, John the producer, and I love Big John because he really got me thinking as well that RFK made a lot of money in some of these lawsuits. I never thought of his work life from that perspective before, that he made money suing some of these big companies. You know, I didn't look at it from that angle, like how he profited. I looked at it like he was being a, you know, like the soldier taking on, you know, Monsanto. Do you know what I'm saying? These companies.
No, Annette, you shouldn't feel guilty about that because if his cause is righteous, then God bless him all the money. Our producer earns a nice salary. You know, do I begrudge him because he earns more than I ever have? No, you know, that's part of America. Now, I would begrudge him if he was going after companies that were innocent or abusing his power, but if not, then God bless him, you know. So that's how I look at that situation across the country in terms, except for actors. Screw those bastards. They make my everything I do go up. They make my popcorn go up, my nachos go up, my hot dog athletes too. Anyway, Roxanne, your thoughts on RFK Jr., then we'll go to G. Then we'll move on to some fun topics.
he's a total hottie. No, I'm sorry that you were asking about his mind. I actually read his book. I'm friends with
his,
and so if you looked at his book, you saw that it was over half of it was footnotes. This is not a frivolous conversation he was having.
No.
And by the way, I have to give a shout out to the OG frontline doctor, my friend Simone Gold, who in week one of the madness of lockdowns, wrote a brilliant letter to Dennis Prager. I think both Dennis Prager and Mark Levin read it on the air. And she happens to be a trained emergency room physician and have her JD as a lawyer. And she said, this is an incredible civil rights violation. And I think we all have to go back to that. So, yes, RFK did great stuff. Yes, Peter McCullough, Robert Malone, all these people. But the original thought that should have occurred to anyone is that the America's independence was forged during a smallpox outbreak. And had there meant to be, and had anyone wanted there to be an outbreak exception to the Constitution, the founders would have known about it. And I understand when G says he just wanted his card so he was freed. I have actually, the tweet is probably still up because I was not allowed to participate in a lot because I did not get vaccinated. I was not allowed to go into the Screen Actors Guild. I'm a union actor. My manager dropped me. I wasn't allowed to work. I was asked about my personal medical information every time I had an audition, which is a job interview. And when people would ask for my papers, I had my pocket constitution. I'd be like, right here. No, it didn't work. I didn't get in anywhere. But I made my point over and over again. And that's what we should have all remembered in 2020.
You know, you're right. I completely forgot about that. That was going around. A lot of the people trying to stand up were saying, hey, remember back then with the smallpox. And I remember hearing it through conservative circles. Gee, your quick thoughts on Robert F. Kennedy in terms of HHS secretary and his stance on COVID.
Yeah, every group is susceptible to groupthink, and no group more than government, because they're all paid to think a certain way and keep that gravy train going. So whether RFK is right or wrong on, you know, his percentage is 50-50, 90-10, whatever it is, at least he'll get in there and question them. And that's all science is about, is questioning the status quo and saying, let's look at this again. Do we need to give this newborn baby 8 vaccines at once, or can we spread it out? Or do we really need this vaccine? Maybe we need all these other ones, but not this one. I think that will be good for our country and our health.
I will say this in defense of our producer, Big John. He loathes RFK, hates him with a passion, and because, you know, he has a special needs child and with autism and all that. So his knowledge goes there. And I've just always told him, I defer to you on that. But on COVID, I'm with him. But that said, all I ever want is answer the why. Why? Why are we giving 70 some odd shots all at once? That's just, I mean, logic dictates. Hey, you think that's too much in one shot? But Big Pharma, here's what people don't know, and we're going to move on, is they are protected from any type of lawsuit for those inoculations they give kids, meaning you can't sue them for at all. They are protected. And some people believe that's why they want to get COVID, and that's why the hepatitis, those shots are in there, because they are insulated. I don't know how true it is, but my thought is simple. We need to take a step back and do a damn study, because for all these inoculations, for as healthy as we talk, we are the fattest, the most obese, the one of the most unhealthiest first world nations in the country. Yeah, and I wish I knew her name. It's a brother sister team. They put out a phenomenal
Means brother and sister. Yeah.
Yes, thank Casey you. And I ordered the book. I haven't had a chance to read it. But she's saying stuff in there that people are like, well, I didn't know that. And I'm like, I knew that because I read health supplement magazines that were on the fringe back in the 80s and 90s, because I was single. I wanted to look good for the ladies, you know? So I worked out, read those, and they were ahead. They were ahead of the game. And the reason I say that, Annette, is because a lot of us learn that way. I quickly learned steroids were not for me, but you learn all about that, because I thought of steroids, you talk about horses. A lot of steroids now are being used for medical purposes. Those poor horses, they went through a lot to get to us. But John is right, too. Our degradation is a result of our successful lives. I do believe as we technologically advance, as we can become more civilized, there's bad outcomes to that too. Annette, before we go on, go ahead.
No, just really quickly, part of the problem, part of what happened too, and part of what is still happening, and I see it all the time because, you know, I teach medical students. We've lost like Marcus Welby. We've lost our faith we've lost faith in our doctors. We're like, we could have those trusted conversations. It's more of like this, it's not that intimacy that I think you need in the physician-patient relationship anymore. And it's just like, again, it's the status quo. It's what the protocol is. It's like, no, I want my doctor to talk to me about, you know, my body and what my whole, you know, health picture is, or let's say for my child or whatever, because it's all a little bit different. There isn't some like one thing works for all of us, you know? Away from that, and we've gotten away from those intimate conversations in medicine and those intimate relationships with our providers, I think, definitely.
No, I agree with you. In fact, things tend to come full circle. I don't know where it stands today, but about 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, the concierge doctor, the doctor in essence who makes house calls, was starting to happen. The downside, it was only for the rich because the average working class can afford them. But my whole belief or hope for that was it could happen again in some form or fashion. All right. So we've had some heavy talks here on COVID, and we're not scientific people, but again, I am like RFK in that sense. When I do my research, y'all can see my notes. It's pretty in depth. I just don't put the footnotes because I don't want to send you an outline that's 30 pages long, you know, but I do use a lot of footnotes myself. So let's get into some fun stuff. I am going to play some videos here because we are conservatives. Big John, our producers of Libertarian. The Democrats are a party of, their mantra is a rhetoric of hate. The election has happened. Here's a Washington Post reporter, Jennifer Rubin is how I call it, but Rubin.
It's not only that Trump has to lose, but that all his enablers have to lose. They have to, we have to collectively, in essence, burn down the Republican Party.
This is post-election.
We have to level them because if there are survivors, if there are people who weather this storm, they will do it again. They will take this as confirmation that, hey, it just pays to ride the waves. Look at me. I've made it through. And so up and down the ticket, federal, state, local offices, the country has to repudiate this. It is not a normal administration. And when these people say, oh, you can't criticize us, it will deter public service.
Okay, she's saying that the Trump administration is not normal, that we are the outliers, we are the fascists, we are bad. That's what she's implying here.
It will deter people who are liars, right, who are enablers, who are really bad people, and they should be deterred.
Okay, before we go on, Miss Roxanne Hogue has to leave us. It was great having you on, Roxanne. We hope to have you on again. You are very knowledgeable. I love hearing your stories, and you bring nuance. You bring information to the table that most of us don't know, so we thank you so much. Before you go, pump yourself up there, little lady. Was that
Well, first, I just want to say, Jennifer Rubin, wow, I don't usually suggest people use substances, but she may want to pop a Xanax for the next 4 years because it's going to be a rough ride for her. if she's this worked out after the election, I fear for her. I am very grateful to you guys. I'm glad that you are still holding on strong in San Diego because Southern California deserves better. Of course, Los Angeles, the largest, most populous county in the country. San Diego, what are you guys, 3 or 4? Like, we should be driving the train that is the resurgence of the California, Republicans in California. And just with a message of common sense and public safety, I think we can do that. Certainly, we're going to ride the momentum that President Trump brought us and do our best. I am here in Los Angeles. I'll be running to be the chair of the Los Angeles County Republican Party at our elections in January. And I can't wait to keep the momentum going. And, Tony Kovarik is a good friend of mine. I was just in San Diego the other day, actually getting his advice on something. And we just all need to help each other and lift each other up and let our friends know that it's okay. You don't have to be Republican to vote for one. You just have to be sane. So that thank you true. All.
Well, good and luck. And you can find Roxanne at Roxanne Hogue on X. Thank you, Roxanne. Yeah. We'll talk soon. All right, guys.
All right, thanks so much.
All right, guys. I want to show you this other one on by Jennifer Rubin. This is as I've seen this. Us Latinos, us first generation Latinos who don't speak much English. These are dangerous words because these are the types of people outside of the nut jobs that will go, "I did not know that," and they'll believe.
I mean, by pithy. How about this? Republicans want to kill your kids. It's actually true.
Thoughts. On Miss Jennifer Rubin, a Washington Post reporter, on her rhetoric of hate. G, you first, then we'll go to Miss Annette.
I mean, how many weeks do we hang on this? Republicans are Nazis, fascists, and Trump is Hitler. How many weeks was that? And he still got elected. This doesn't work. And I don't know who believes this except for, like Roxanne said, the insane people on the left who go, "Oh yeah, Republicans do want to kill children." I mean. I see three here that don't want to do that. I mean, are there any exceptions on?
I don't know. My neighbor's kid gets on my nerves, you know. Damn little rat. I'm kidding. Miss Annette, your thoughts?
I mean, I think the culture of death is really more of a has been propagated more by people that are on the left than people that are on the right, for sure. I mean, just abortion, that issue alone, and that sentence she said, I don't know what the context was. But what children do we want to kill? I meant, for what reason? By what? I wish I could have heard more of what she was trying to say. But just anything that's, listen, they're all, like she said, they're going to need a Xanax. They're all out of sorts right now. And they're saying all kinds of terrifying things because they're really upset by what's happened. And it's like an upside down world at the moment for them. Because
right.
You know what I mean?
No, you're right. So let's keep moving here. Now, racism is still part of their playbook, despite the fact that they took almost half of my Latino brethren. I was already on the other team. So, but they, you know, it's like, S.A., come aboard. You know, but they're still using the race card. And Sherilyn Ifill, she called Pete Hegseth a white supremacist due to his opposition to the advancement of black officers in the military. Now, I researched that. I'm like, man, you will never find an enlisted person, at least, who's going to sit there and say, yeah, they're racist, because there's always somebody of color above us somewhere in that chain of command. That's just, now, there is racism, but it's hierarchy. It's class racism. 95% of flag officers, meaning all those generals and admirals in D.C., 95% of them come from the flag staff, I forget the term, but like West Point, Air Force Academy, Annapolis, and what's the other one? I think those are the three. That's where 95% come from. So there is discrimination from that perspective, but not color. And so here's what she said about Pete Hegseth. And part of the problem with Pete Hegseth is he's got this Christian emblem that's Christian, and they say it's Nazi because it looks similar, I guess, to the not the swastika, but the Nazis took some biblical symbols and turned them into their own. So here's the one I show Elfil, though. Let me get that one going.
The Secretary of Defense nominee, Peter Hegseth, the Fox News commentator as well, because this is someone who weekend host. Important to see.
They had to make that distinction. He's only a weekend host.
Distinction. This is someone who, you know, is known to be a white supremacist, known to be an extremist.
Did y'all know that he was a white supremacist? This was the first time I had ever heard Pete Hegseth referred to as a white supremacist.
Whose platform, whose book is basically about his opposition to the advancement of black officers to the top brass.
So when I see that, that boils my blood, because one, she's just flat out lying. That I know for a fact. But second, she knows she's lying, and she's purposely pushing hate. We're going to get into it in a few minutes on MSNBC. This is why MSNBC's dying. And then your thoughts when you hear just blatantly trying to destroy somebody's
credibility.
Reputation.
Yes. I don't even know where that came from. I mean, they just like pull these things out of a hat. And by the way, to the point about Rubin saying that these people in the Trump administration or whatever are liars. Tim Walz and Kamala weren't liars. But anyway, I know that's
old. No. He was just a good old boy.
I know. But I mean, this is the kind of thing though that can destroy people, because for some reason, because there's fear about this, people hang on to that. Oh, he's a white supremacist. And then it grows. It's like a rapid fire. You know what I mean? It's like a wildfire that grows. I just wanted to say this is so related. My daughter called me this morning. She goes, did you hear, Mom? RFK, he wants to take away Ozempic. I said, he does. Yes. I'm going to show you the video. She said, yes, I'm going to send you the video. She sent me the video. And he never said that. That is not what he said. He said he didn't think so many people should be taking it. He said he didn't think it'd be good for kids. Never said he was taking it away. He just doesn't really like the drug, which is fair enough. It's his opinion. But he never said, I'm taking it away. Anyway, people, they get on these things, right? And they gain traction with them, which is scary.
Right. I'll be honest. I've heard nothing good of Ozempic in terms of the downsides to it. I'm like, you know, I lose weight the old-fashioned way. Gee, your thoughts on this rhetoric of racism?
No, it's obviously like it's MSNBC, so they're just going to say and throw out whatever they can so that it sticks. And reminds me of Dan Rather saying, well, you know, the whole George Bush military thing back in 2004, even though it was found to be fraudulent, he still says George Bush needs to answer it. He's evading answering these questions, even though the documents are false. It's the same thing here. Like, what's he going to do? Come out and say, no, I'm not white supremacist? Then it gives credence to what she's saying. But if he doesn't answer it, then maybe it does gain life. And
right.
And so I think they're taking the tack of just ignore MSNBC. They're going to be sold to Elon Musk soon anyways.
Right. So let's move on to Nancy Mace. She opposes men and female bathrooms. She's a rape survivor. She was raped at age 16. This is very personal to her. There's a chart going around with about a dozen men who claim to be women and have been busted trying to take the picture. I mean, that's gross. Watching somebody release this, I'm like, I don't care if you're a man or woman. It's like, that's sick, you know, and they've been busted, you know, and that, it's like, there's no reason for a man to be in there, you know. This is what was sent to her.
Video goes out to Congresswoman Nancy Mace.
God, such a ladylike voice, isn't that?
Congresswoman Nancy Mace, I hope that one day I do find you in that woman's bathroom and I grab your ratty looking fucking hair and drag your face down to the floor while I repeatedly bash.
That's the type of woman I want to go out with.
Shit in until the blood's everywhere and you're dead. Thank you. I hope that Nancy Mace receives this message well. Kisses.
She did, and the cops did a visit to her, and I think they took care of business. That's just hate, because she does not – they're still – and we didn't talk about this, but some exit polling in certain regions of the country, transgenders were actually the number one issue. An issue that 18% of the country is dealing with was the number one issue in some exit polls. I don't think the Democrats understand. This isn't going well for them, this battle. When you see that as a woman, how this is a man pretending to be a woman, you know, what goes through your mind?
I heard her speak on this, Nancy. She was very, very articulate and very strong, I thought. I mean, she just made the point clearly. And I think Roxanne said it earlier, maybe G said it too. You probably have said it many times, William. It's like common sense. It's like we live in this nonsensical world where we decided now that all of a sudden everything that has some sort of natural order to it has become disordered. I think it's really a scary place for us to be as a society. But then when I hear that, you know, man, I guess is a woman, say that, I mean, that is downright frightening to me. And as a woman, when and this is what Nancy Mace said about being in private spaces as a woman, I mean, every time now I go into the public bathroom, I'm always afraid that I'm going to see someone who's a man. And I'm always like, I would have to leave. Or like, you're in the stall and then you see the feet. And I'm afraid that I'm going to see the feet and it's going to be like a man's shoes. And that makes me feel threatened. It literally does. I want to and I can't even bust out of there very quickly because, you know, I can't walk. But I mean, that is a very vulnerable place to be, especially because sometimes the bathrooms, in a public bathroom's in a corner or whatever. There's nobody else around. Sometimes you're the only one in there. Maybe just one other person comes in. I don't like
that. No, I understand. It makes perfect sense. They should make a comic book out of you, a superhero, have you busting out of that stall. Gee, your thoughts when you see a man acting like a woman, physically threatening somebody because she doesn't want, and what she's referring to for the audience is a congressman got elected who's a cross-dresser in essence. He tucks it with tape, you know? So, you know, and here's what the media wasn't telling you in this battle. They already have neutral setting bathrooms. There's no reason for him, her, it, whatever, to go into the female bathroom when there's a neutral setting bathroom. That solves all the problems. They're making it a problem. She stood up for the woman. I have three sisters, a mother, and an aunt, and I'm proud of Nancy Mace, too. And not only that, she's a victim survivor, G of 16, and she's not one of these victim survivors who is trying to forget, you know, move on. And God bless those women, too. She's one that's not forgetting what happened to her, and she's fighting for those who can.
Yeah, it's seriously disturbing that when – you and I was going to say it, but you just said it. They do have single stall bathrooms there. And this transgender person does not want to use that. Wants to be in the bathroom with other women, right? Women, I should say. That is disturbing to me. And my wife won't even let my 11-year-old son go to the men's room at like Walmart or Target or any other public place like McDonald's or wherever by himself because of men and they belong in that bathroom. So I can only imagine how triggering it is for Mace to feel that way when she's already been violated and had violence perpetrated on her. And watching that TikTok or Instagram, whatever that was, it's terrible. It's terrible. I mean, that's a threat to someone's life. I mean, that's not free speech. That's a threat.
No, no. And here's what the media is not telling you. There is a mental illness associated with men who cross-dress, who get sexually aroused. And there is a percent. It's called transvestic disorder. How many of these men are those? I mean, we don't know. So to me, it's like, let's compromise, create a third bathroom. Okay, whatever the city wants to pay for. If not, you use a men's bathroom where you belong. But to me, it's about protecting women and children. As a man, I'm 5'7", but I know how to fight. I've taken, you know, a 5'7" with my mouth. I realized decades ago, I better learn how to fight, you know, with my mouth. But it doesn't matter if I was a girl, because genetically speaking, the average guy is stronger than the average girl. And you just saw the guy's voice. I could picture him with Nancy Mace and beating on her. It's like he sickened me. He disgusted me. So let's move on to this one here goes hand in hand with the immigration talk we had earlier. It's Julie Roginski, formerly of Fox. Here's the other thing. All these talking heads, they seem to float around. They get let go. The contract runs out of Fox. They go to CNN. It runs out of CNN. They go to MSNBC, NBC, you know. So here's Julie Roginski.
The Secretary of
Oop, I'm sorry. Where are you at, Julie? Oh, here we go.
Every fiber of my being, because I'll probably be one of those people, that if anybody comes for these people and tries to drag them out by force, there will be protests.
She's talking about the deportation process with President-elect Trump.
People like me, American citizens, who are going to stand there and do everything possible to prevent these women and children, which is all who these people are.
How about the criminals?
Now, do y'all really think she's going to be standing there in line and protesting with these people from her gated community in New York City where she's got security guards? I don't think so.
How about the terrorists? How about the community?
How do you sort
stop.
Through
How do you know who it
how
is?
How do you sort through all,
that's the problem. I don't know who it is.
I'm sorry. I live next to these people. I can tell you they are women and they are children.
Do you really think she lives next to these illegals? Yeah. Do you really think? No.
Children. Are there terrorists among them? I don't know. But I can tell you that
and
there
neither
are.
Neither does the government.
But I can tell you. But let me
tell.
Okay. But what I'm telling you right now, practically speaking, is that there will be people, American citizens, who will prevent these little kids from being dragged out of these shelters. There are. And what's going to happen to these people? What is going to happen to the military when the military opens fire on us?
But no one's.
Boom, right there. She doesn't say open fire on illegals on us. That's the rhetoric of hate. And I'm like, bring it on from the perspective. Keep talking like that. Because that's what's going to convince most of America to go, we're not buying what you're saying. Then you add the Lake and Riley, the other murders. She's doing nothing to help her cause.
Can you say,
hang on a sec, Chuck. We're way down a rabbit hole here.
God, Jenny's, he's my new hero, man. That guy just goes in and destroys leftists with snark. What are your thoughts? When I hear that, my thought is you're proliferating hate. You would have made the Third Reich proud. You would have made General Noriega in Panama proud. You would have made Fidel Castro proud, because that's the type of propaganda they use against America and their own citizens. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, earlier in the show I said they're going to basically turn this into soldiers deporting little children, and you can see it right there. She's saying it's not men, I don't think they're terrorists, it's all women and children, which we all know that's not true, and we know that there's a segment of them that are women and children, but even Trump himself has said, okay, there's layers of it. You start with the criminals. You start with the gang members. But once you get to the level of where it's abuelitas, women, and children, then we've got to think of it differently. and it's probably not going to be the military going in. So she's just spewing her propaganda, trying to get traction with it, and CNN's allowing it on there.
She was very good, or Annette, she was very good with her passion. That foy passion. Did I say it right? That foy passion. I always say flaw. That foy passion was there 100%. I guess what I'm asking, what's your emotion when you hear her talk like that?
I say, take him in. Take care of him. Feed the, I mean, these people, it is all like hollow talk to me. That's really, you know, it's hollow talk. It doesn't really mean anything. She's not really saying anything. I don't see her as the kind of activist who's going to like feed the homeless and actually really is going to like get down and dirty and roll up her sleeves and help people on the streets. And so to me, it's just like coming from, it's like a voice coming from, it's a hollow man.
Hell, Annette, 90% of the working class that gets their shirts up and all that for their job, they're not going to roll their shirts up for anybody. It's just, you know, it's a lot of talk, you know. All right, so let's move on to our final one before we close it out with MSNBC's potential death. This is Miss Sunny Hostin. I'm pretty sure all y'all have seen this one, but it's just too good to pass up. I got to share the screen on this one. Can you guys hear that? Can you hear it?
No.
I can't hear her.
Okay, I know why. I know why. Hold on one second. Screen. I did entire screen. I got to do Chrome tab or window. Can you hear that? Can you hear it?
No.
Son of a gun. Our producer's trying to jump in. Hold on one second. No, yeah, we're going to have to skip. We're going to have to skip that one there. In essence, Sunny Hostin was forced to, that's my neighbor there doing her little test drive there. Sunny Hostin was, she denigrated. Saying, you know, he's sleeping with kids, 17-year-old. Then Whoopi jumped in and said, you know, that's why the kids won't be protected. And it's because of this regime, you know. And 3 minutes later, Whoopi goes to Sunny, and you got to read the legal note. And you can see the look in her face. Oh, you know, I apologize legally. I mean, she didn't say that, but that's what in essence it boiled down to. They've crossed the line. Now, the reason I brought that up is because, you know, my wife asked me, well, he's a politician. Don't you always tell me that? You can say stuff, and I'm like, well, and I want to give a shout out to Patrick Bet David's show. John, I think his name, their uber brainy guy, explained it. The absence of malice. It's a standard that typically protects media outlets from libel claims when they publish false information about public figures without intentional malice or reckless disregard for truth. Translation, most people who would have said that, there's no malice. They're just reporting. The problem here that he was saying is they have weeks of just denigrating. That's all they ever do. Thus, there's the potential for them to be able to prove malice. And that's why the producers and the legal team immediately came back and said, and I don't have where she berated him, but I do have on video the apology. So let me show you that here. Oh, here we go.
Could you nominate someone with allegations of child trafficking across state lines?
I apologize. The top is her denigrating him, and the bottom is her apology. And I want to give a hat tip to Colin Rugg. He's a must-follow on X. He's the one who put this clip together.
And having sex with a 17-year-old, my understanding further on in the interview, they discussed the fact that once he finds out that she's 17, he stops having sex with her.
Okay, Sunny, you have a legal note.
I do have a legal note. Thank you, Whoopi.
Okay, so here comes the apology. This is like just a couple minutes later after she had said this. Again, I apologize for interrupting, but that is due to copyright.
Matt Gaetz has long denied all allegations, calling the claims, quote, invented. and saying in a statement to ABC News that this false smear following a 3-year criminal investigation should be viewed with great skepticism, that DOJ investigation was closed with no charges being brought.
We'll be right back.
There you go. So we don't really need to comment on it, but real quick, did you guys see the hate on her face as she's forced to apologize and that? Well, I mean, my thought was, oh my God, I do not want to be near that woman because if Liz could be killed, I would have been dead 10 times over. That's what I saw when she was apologizing. What were your thoughts when you saw that?
I felt the sincerity.
Gee, what are your thoughts?
She's a lawyer and she's been able to say whatever she's wanted to, but now something's changed in this country where now she has to read a legal disclaimer, and it's a good change. She can be held accountable to what she's saying. I mean, so yeah, and she looked really excited to read that too. I mean, it was with a smile on her face. And Whoopi really wanted to chime in, like we do, right? Like, hey, I got a point to say. No, she's like, cue the commercial break.
Yeah. Well, Big John, our producer, is correct. She's being insincere on purpose. Here's what she failed to realize. Her anger, her being so insincere, it was like, in my old sailor thoughts, it was like having an orgasm all over again. Like, hey, you know, it was like just icing on the cake. It was phenomenal because the thought of her hating to say every syllable that came out of her mouth was just pure magic to me. To me, that was good. Had she come across, I apologize, man. You know, I was wrong. I would have been, damn, she's being sincere. I can't hate on her. But the fact she was so insincere made it just even more delectable. Is that the right word?
But actually, insincerity is a great segue to Morning Joe, isn't it? Which we're talking about MSNBC.
Yes, we're going to talk about MSNBC. Morning Joe is one of the final questions. We don't talk to them per se, but I want to talk about something that the old former standard pre-Tucker Carlson era, pre-blow-up internet era, Bill O'Reilly, he's on News Nation. He still has millions of people. His books still sell millions. So even though he's no longer part of the pop culture, the culture, part involved in that, he's still raking it in. He's on News Nation now, I think, every night with Chris Cuomo. The irony, those two are their opposites. But they bring something to the table. He was talking about the financial struggles of MSNBC and CNBC. They are dying. I have followed this for over a decade. They were giants at CNBC, at least, was a giant ratings-wise. And then Fox FBN came around. Then they just started dying. And MSNBC has cratered. Comcast wants to spin off those networks along with Sci-Fi, Universal, and maybe a couple others because they're destroying the reputation of Comcast, specifically MSNBC. It's bringing down NBC's news division in respectability. And he had a whole take on it. My thought, first of all, is since 2000 for the audience. In 2000, I watched MSNBC, I watched CNN. However, MSNBC within 18 months moved full blown left. CNN took a few more years, and they retained some of their credibility because I don't know, you guys may be too young, but Big John and I remember the first Persian Gulf War. That's where Wolf Blitzer became a household name. That's where you saw frontline coverage that you had never seen before since Vietnam, but even more in depth, more detailed. So they lived off that reputation for a few years until we saw their utter collapse. Fox News entered the market, I want to say 6 months after MSNBC, and they just began dominating both MSNBC and CNN. Now, O'Reilly had an interesting take. He says, first of all, the uncoupling is going to lead to their potential death because they don't have the resources to pay Rachel Maddow, who took a $5 million pay cut. Now she's only earning $25 million a year. You know, they don't have the resources to pay her that. That NBC News is distancing itself because they're dying by association. The NBC Nightly News is down 20% over the last 5 years. The Today Show, which used to annually destroy the competition, is down 30%. MSNBC's market value is literally negligible. First of all, we'll start with you, Annette. Your thoughts on my belief that this change of leftism began at the turn of the century when they tried to take the election Al Gore did and the media was 100% behind him, and that started down in Florida. What are your thoughts on that?
You mean for the – yeah, I actually think you got that absolutely right. And I think CNN then was to follow. And I remember – I'm sorry, I am your age, actually. I must look really young, but of Wolf Blitzer and that coverage. And but over time, those shows, they had that left-leaning – but I used to watch them, William, though. I could still watch those shows. And over time, right. I could watch Chris Matthews, right? And over time, it got worse and worse and worse and worse. So it wasn't really like a, it was like a descent. You know what I mean? It really, to me, it wasn't overnight. It got to the point.
No, I agree. It wasn't overnight.
Right? It was just nauseating. And then it felt like it was just a mouthpiece for the DNC. And then it became, they weren't trustworthy at all. They lost all credibility. And I haven't watched it now. In the last few years, I can't even watch it.
Oh, I agree. Chris Harbaugh was my favorite show on MSNBC. I look forward to that. And Brit Hume was anchoring it on Fox News. But that,
I forget. He's great. Brit Hume is great. I like him.
Yeah. He was on Fox. I mean, those were my two favorite shows. But Chris Matthews Harbaugh was my favorite show at the time, at the turn of the century. So what are your thoughts? When did you see the leftward shift? Did you see it before or after 2000 in relation to what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it was probably after 2004 because I believe MSNBC started as a collaboration between NBC and Microsoft.
Correct.
And that was the same year that Fox News started. And I think they actually started before Fox News. But Fox News obviously catered to the right, right? So that was – they knew that was their audience because the right really had no other place to go. And MSNBC within 8 years realized, well, we should cater to the left. And then CNN's caught in the middle like the redheaded stepchild going and their logo is red. Who do we cater to? The middle? Because there's not enough people in the middle. They either want to hear this or that. Yeah, and so I think they started a leftward drag towards the left. But I will say in this last election cycle, CNN did some pretty scathing pieces on Kamala, which was refreshing to see. Aaron Burnett specifically, and then the guy that black-haired guy who did all the polling analysis.
Yeah.
I mean, he was pretty good too. And
the guy at the board that was moving.
The board. And he's saying everyone's saying X has turned into this right-wing thing. And just last week or this week, he said no. 48% of people on X are liberal and 47 are conservative. So I think CNN's trying to get that credibility back.
The axe is coming. Gee, the axe is coming down. Maybe they got wind. But I remember watching that election night. They were they ABC and MSNBC. It's 3 a.m. They're still not calling it, but they're talking about it as if Trump's going to be the president. But they won't call it, you know. So O'Reilly also talked about MSNBC losing access to resource, aka money, the paying staff, the production staff. You heard me talk about the nightly news is down 20%. Today's Show down 30%. And MSNBC's market is negligible. Now, CNN is a more highly valued entity, and they tried to spin that off Warner Brothers, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, and they could not get one person to even consider buying it. So I believe O'Reilly when he talks about them, their value being considered negligible. What are your overall thoughts, G? We'll start with you on his belief that MSNBC really has nothing without being attached to NBC financially being able to pay its people or to survive, is what he's saying.
I don't know what value it has at all. I mean, they're saying Elon Musk might buy, but what is he buying? Like, can't he create a studio of his own? So he would just buy the personalities, and who cares about those personalities?
No, I hate to interrupt you, but what he's buying on the – see, it's hard. I know this because of the NFL Network. I was the NFL Network's first fantasy football analyst, so I got a little inside juju. It was a battle to what channel they got. It was a battle to what cable carriers carried them. Everything was a battle because they weren't welcome. So what happens, whoever buys MSNBC has the slots open, meaning they're already on Comcast. They're already on Roadrunner. On Time Warner. They're already it's already a product that's already has a built-in foundation. And I actually think the personalities are what you want to get rid of. And I think so if Elon buys it, what he's done is he's taken X over the mentality that he's built around X over to cable. The question is, how much value is there in that? So what are your thoughts there on that in terms of MSNBC losing access resources, but yet having access to the cable structure? Listen to that.
Do you think that they want our show to be put in there?
I don't think they can afford us.
Are they ready for us is what I want to know. Does Elon want to slot us in?
Our producer salary alone could bring with them.
Yeah, wait. Sorry. I was just too excited at the thought that maybe they're just going to, you know, get rid of all those people and bring in Grumblings Media. Wait, so what was your question?
My question is, do you think MSNBC is toast without NBC, and do you think there's any potential value? I kind of corrected myself because, I think there is value in them for an outsider to buy them because they already have a structure built in. They're on cable already.
No, that makes sense to me, and then I understand what you're saying. So somebody could essentially buy it and, like, start fresh.
Correct. No, I agree.
There's no value in being a left-leaning news network anymore. If they want to have any hope, they do what Elon did to X and make it fair. If you have a right-wing show, then the next hour put a left-wing show. Or do like a Hannity and Combs, where you have a left-winger and a right-winger, and they're sitting there battling it out.
Right.
Put a libertarian like John on, right?
Yeah. So I will say this.
Look at their ratings, right, though, William? Their ratings are terrible.
Right. We're going to talk about that in just a second. But real quick, I want to defend the Hallmark Channel. Patrick Bet-David, you got to watch him. You got to watch Megyn Kelly. Two phenomenal podcasts. But they were ragging because MSNBC was being beaten by the Hallmark Channel. I got news for you, brother Patrick. Hallmark is a titan come holiday season. They are one of the top cable broadcast networks during – No, it's true. Their numbers are staggering.
Really?
Staggering. Yes. They're based.
I've never watched it once.
Those leftist white suburban women thrive on the Hallmark Channel. Lacey Chatterson, whatever her name is, the very young girl from Party of Five, where she was a little pre-puberty girl. She's a full-grown woman with kids now. She's like a superstar on the Hallmark Network. So
I don't know who that is. I've never seen
my wife. I had to call DirecTV. Y'all took off the Hallmark Channel without telling me. My wife is pissed. Well, sir, look, if you don't put it on, we are going elsewhere. Well, we can't do that. 10 minutes later, we turned it on there, and the Hallmark Channel was back on. You know, they knew their audience. They're better, better. Okay, so we're approaching the 2-minute mark, so I don't want to wrap this up because there's a couple of topics, but let's speed through it here. So, O'Reilly says the reason for the decline is because her content it's not leftist or progressive anymore. It's content that's focused on hate that targets Trump and his supporters. We just saw it with the lady calling Pete Hegseth with no proof a racist. And he says that the 2024 election exposed the ineffectiveness of MSNBC's approach. I think it exposed not just MSNBC, but CNN and the perceived hateful content that hate he believes is affecting the NBC news division. Your thoughts, G, then we'll go to Annette, then we'll go to the final section of this topic.
Yeah, so I heard from O'Reilly today, might be more updated numbers, but after the election, MSNBC dropped 50%. And then after Morning Joe and Mika met with Trump, it dropped another 17%. Because if they were honest about Trump as Hitler, why are you meeting with Hitler? Why are you extending an olive branch? Start an armed resistance, you know, use the Second Amendment because the guy is really Hitler, right? If you really believe right. that. But now they've shown themselves to be frauds. They didn't believe anything they said, and let's go, quote unquote, kiss the ring of Hitler and make amends with him, and then maybe we'll play nice for the next 4 years. So that's why they lost another 17%.
Annette, your thoughts?
Yeah, that was incredible to watch. Talk about disingenuous. All the stuff that they've been saying and all the stuff they've been touting about him. And then all of a sudden they know. And the thing is, what made me really disgusted was when Mika brought up her dad, like, oh, you know, that's what my dad would have done. You know, like I've been part of this like diplomacy. What was his dad? What was her dad? Brzezinski, Secretary of State.
No, he was a Russian defector who had a big hand in government as advisors with Reagan, but he was a Russian defector. Now, I do have a question specifically as to why that may have happened, so let's hold off on that. But real quick, on Mika's father, everything he predicted that we could get away with and do in the Ukraine, we are actually doing and have done, starting with a coup. And so everything her daddy said turned out to be wrong, because he saw the Russians as ineffective, as they're never going to side with China. They're never going to side with this country, that country. And they've done everything he said they wouldn't. So she may want to rethink about bragging daddy up, at least to people like me who do read. You know. So real quick, on the ratings, it's been a collapse, as G said. Yeah. MSNBC, yeah. The average viewership now. Now, a decade ago, they could easily get 1 to 2 million for their shows. Their average viewership during the day is down 38%, 520,000 viewers per show. We're talking across the country. They are built into the system of cable. You know, their prime time viewership is down 48% with 684,000 viewers. CNN down 27%, 367,000 viewers on average. Their prime time, 464,000, down 35%. The last I heard, Anderson Cooper makes $10 million a year, but then I heard somebody 2 days ago say that he makes $20 million a year. They can't afford that neither. That's why the axe is coming down shortly on CNN, and they already know that. In contrast, Fox's average viewership is 2 million. The primetime viewership is 3.2 million. So the destruction of their own making, CNN and MSNBC, is in front of us now, whereas Fox is thriving. So let's get to the question real quick on the Morning Joe. You guys can comment on the ratings too. But do you believe Morning Joe was sent there by MSNBC executives to try to give a hand at reconciliation, to try to bring some moderation, some perceived unbiasedness, because they're going to try to sell him? G and then Annette.
I think Trump's good for ratings. I think that if they can get Trump on MSNBC, I mean, they'll instantly like quadruple their ratings that night. So I think that's why the people are dropping like droves from viewership. And they said, look, if we can get Trump on our side, he shows up on the show a few times, maybe we can moderate and maybe we can save our network. It all comes down to the dollar.
So you agree. Part of it was the going there trying to save their network. Miss Annette, your thoughts. Do you think the brass sent Mika and Joe in hopes of trying to save their network?
Yeah, wait a second. Hold on. G, you guys talk without me 1 second because my dog is passing.
All right. So, G, do you think I don't think MSNBC is going to be able to spin off and go public with Sci-Fi and the USA network. And there's one more network. Oh, and the Golf Channel. So CNBC, Sci-Fi, Golf Channel, USA Network are the networks that they're talking about spinning off. I agree with O'Reilly. I don't think they have the money, the resources to be able to carry on their own. I think they go private. I think they go private just like these newspapers have been going private, and hedge fund and billionaires buy them as their little boy toys. Your thoughts?
Yeah, O'Reilly was saying that you can have it for almost next to nothing. I mean, at this point, I think MSNBC wants to not drag its main network down with MSNBC like a ball and chain on them. So, you know, if they can turn it around, it's a low risk attempt, because the price tag will be so low. Now, I think the price tag for those other networks will be higher, like the Science Channel, the Golf Channel. I mean,
right.
Huge viewership for that, but
right. So you're in agreement with me. You probably think that a private investor is going to go in. And when I say private investors, the only one able to do that are literally hedge fund managers or the Uber entrepreneurs like the Mike Dells, the Jeff Bezos.
Well, some names I heard was Soros or Elon Musk.
Right? Yeah, Soros is the other one. Yeah. See, even then, though, I think with radio, I don't know. I just think the whole market is dying for leftism. So, Miss Annette, before we end the show here, do you think
the Brzezinski, I mean, on Mika and Joe, I just was, if that's what you think happened there, then that really worries me even more. Because I'm such a believer that I was thinking to myself, maybe they actually did wake up and see, wait a minute, we could be missing something here. Like, if they did it Sorry.
No, you naive little girl. But go on.
No, if you're saying that they did it to save the network because without it, if they hadn't done something like that, or at least extended an olive branch, then they're even in more trouble, then that's even more despicable to me. I actually started to believe, I'm like, they're going to lose some people, but what they're trying to do is they're trying to find some common ground. I believed it, you know, but then now it seems even more insincere.
God bless whoever showed you the light, because what you say some weeks, I was like, those are the people who vote Democrat. But you're right. Their whole purpose was to get people to believe that. Now, I'm not saying they sent them there for that one meeting to save the network. That's not a possibility. But I think you said it best. To put the olive branch to begin amends, to try to prop up a sinking ship before it's like, see, we plugged the hose. See, we plugged the hose, Mr. Investor. Come by us. Come by us. I think that's what they're doing. Any final words on any topic before we end the show, Mr. G, and then we'll close it out with Mr. Nett.
No, I think, I mean, you know, there's another question of whether The View might also be sold off. I don't think they will be. I mean, there's still a large group of leftist women who want to watch a show where the word liberal is silent in the name of the show, because it should be called The Liberal View.
You're right. The View for the audience is still the number one rated daytime talk show. Their numbers have been going up since 2020, and they average about 2.5, 2.6. And actually, I checked out their salaries. Whoopi and Joy are—they're not even—they're 7 and 8 million. Everybody else is like at the low 1 million or a quarter of a million. So they're smart. They're running that like a business.
I thought it's equal pay for equal work. Never mind.
And notice it's the white women earning more than the black women. I don't want to start anything though. Miss Annette, final words.
Actually, wait, are you surprised? I mean, I have a question for you, William, really quickly. And G, are you guys surprised by that?
Oh, The View? No. No, no, no. Talk TV replaced soap operas. That happened about 15 years ago. The problem is you get overbloated salaries that killed a lot of these shows.
But wasn't the MSNBC format for the Mika and Joe show sort of like talk TV?
Right, but you're talking The View, which is on network television, which is free TV, versus cable, which is limited and not in every household. And then you got to there's various X factors here that make network TV still the king in terms of cable television versus free rabbit ears television. That and The View is its own brand to started, 30 years ago by Barbara
Walters, right?
Yeah. Well, it started with legitimacy, kept legitimacy, it became a sideshow freak, but it's one of the few outlets for these white leftist suburban women where they all pile on every morning at 2 million a pop.
Okay. All right.
All right, everybody. Everybody, we had a long show today, but it was a fun show. We dug into some deep stuff. We are not scientists, but we were able to talk about Los Angeles not being the sanctuary city, why it could be the death knell, and something the Republican Party in California should be able, if you try to jump on. Thank God people are fighting back and getting their just rewards financially in terms of the COVID crackdown they were forced to abide by, and the COVID studies that are finally coming to light. Again, my take isn't that all vaccines are bad. Not at all. There are very good vaccines, but the COVID vaccine is not one of them, and these studies are showing that. So I think we need to start looking at these studies as a government, as a state, as local government, as parents, and seeing the realities. Does my child really need one? Do I need one? Do my parents need one? And then the mainstream media rhetoric, no, people, it won't change. And I think we showed you enough videos to show that. And then we all think that, yes, it's almost curtains for MSNBC if something drastic does not happen. So do not forget, before I forget this, my producer hammers me on the head, do not forget you can check this video out, this podcast out, with others like it at Grumbly's Media. And you can also check us out on our social media platforms. I was going to say Google, but not Google anymore, but Rumble, YouTube, Apple, Pandora, and Spotify. I am William Del Pilar. This is Fired Up. And for G. Mangani and Ms. Annette Ross, until next week, we bid you adieu.